We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future.
It's Manson Mitchell on the Weekend with Gary Manson, Suzanne Mitchell. A double shot of good conversation with great guests to power up your day. Manson Mitchell, you're on the air.
Thank you, Eric Crema. Hi, everybody. Happy Saturday to you. Happy weekend, wherever you might be. I'm Gary Mance.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
Together, we are Manson Mitchell in your ears for the hour. And we get, once again, the opportunity of a weekend, of a Saturday, to work with our great producer and good buddy, tall guy Nathan Miller. How you doing, Nathan?
Good morning and afternoon to you, Gary and Suzanne. I am doing great. Bracing myself, though. I'm looking for my seatbelt. Got to buckle it up. But I didn't get supplied one for this chair for the future coming up.
That's right. You know, and we like to start our shows with what in the trade is known as a drop there. And today, Suzanne, the takeaway for me is it has something to do with the future.
Oh, yes. And Criswell.
And Criswell, bless his soul. Today we are going to talk about women on the fringe, groundbreaking women in the paranormal.
And we're going outside our usual format because we don't have a guest. We have three guests.
We have three guests. Yes, we do. We have a trio of pulchritudinous princesses of the paranormal.
Ah, okay. Let me give you their brief introduction, and then we're going to start talking to each one. Denise A. Agnew, Marie D. Jones, and Nicole Strickland are all women on the fringe in their own right. Their backgrounds and bodies of work can be seen at DeniseAAgnew.com, MarieDJones.com, and NicoleStrickland.com. Welcome to Manson Mitchell. We are overjoyed with the abundance of guests that we have today. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right.
Great to be here.
Oh, we are so happy to have the three of you joining us. It's an honor for us. To get started, why don't we let you ladies talk about your own individual connection to the paranormal and particularly to paranormal research in such a professional and serious minded way. And true to the book, which is listed with the co-authors alphabetically, I will follow suit. Let's start with you, Denise A. Agnew. How did you get into this business?
Well, it's kind of a natural progression from childhood. Basically, I've always been interested in the paranormal since I was a little kid. There was never a time that I remember not being interested. So it just was in my blood, I guess. And I didn't have any, I would say, really profound paranormal experiences that I could identify as a child as actually being that. So it wasn't necessarily something that happened to me that made me think, hey, there are ghosts or UFOs or, you know, anything like that. But my mom, she was really great at getting me into reading. She wanted me to start reading right off when I was very little. And so I read a lot of books that a lot of kids my age wouldn't have been allowed to read, you know, some of the scary stuff. And that could include the nonfiction paranormal as well as the fiction paranormal. And so I was doing that from a very young age and just kind of gobbling it up like candy. I couldn't, you know, get my hands on enough of them. You know, those little scholastic books that we used to get when we were kids, all of the mysteries, that kind of thing. So I read that. And slowly but surely, I also kind of realized that I was really good at reading people in terms of figuring out what was going on in their head. And I don't know if you could call that telepathic or not, or just a very good ability and empathic way to understand what was going on with them. And that included the adults. And I would frequently say things out loud to them that, you know, about something that was going on in their head or something they might be thinking, and they would be totally shocked about what the heck is going on here? Oh, this little kid is coming up with stuff. They didn't always appreciate it. But then as time went on, that enthusiasm for paranormal never diminished. And I really didn't start getting into like things like paranormal investigation or anything you might call professional in that sense. And I don't know if anybody is really a professional at this because there's so many different avenues you can go and different ways you can go. But I didn't start that until much, much later. I joined a paranormal group about, gosh, it'd be like 2014. And so that's when I started doing some with an investigation group. Figured out that I do have mediumship abilities, but that didn't occur until about 2018 when I realized that some of the things that had been happening to me as a kid actually were mediumship. And so I just keep going on with it. I keep learning new things about it. I could probably go on all day about the things that I'm enthusiastic about in that realm.
Denise, when I was a preteen, I had a very good friend who we would occasionally sleep over at each other's house. And I can remember sleeping over at her house and her putting on one of the old horror movies, like a Dracula or a Frankenstein. And she would love it. And I would spend most of the time with my head under a pillow. So I picture you as the friend I had as a child where you could watch that and appreciate it. And I was just plain old scared. It was interesting in reading about you in Women on the Fringe that you exhibited an awful lot of sensitivities mm-hmm. to light and to touch. And it was interesting to note that you had these from an early age, but then it really came home to you when you went to one particular location in Edinburgh.
That's true. I forgot about that. Yeah, it was a very weird experience, I think, because even though I thought I was psychic at the very least, I realized that I didn't go running around telling people that or expressing it a lot because a lot of people just think you're crazy if you say that. But my husband and I lived in England for 3 years. And one time we went to Scotland for what they call a Hogmanay season, which is New Year's Eve. We went to one of the ghost tours, which it was under the what's called the Southbridge Tunnels. And the Southbridge Tunnels are, you'll probably also hear them called Mary King's Close. And that's a separate part of the tunnels. But there's all these tunnels underneath Edinburgh that were essentially where people lived in very dire conditions. And so we went on this tour, and it was one of those things where you come down and there's not very much lighting, of course, which is great for a tour because you're trying to, you know, the two guys are trying to scare people, of course, you know, and give you a little thrill with that. And I'm not bothered by underground stuff. I'm not claustrophobic. I've been in a lot of places like, you know, a cave here and there and anywhere where you could possibly get claustrophobic. And so as we were going down, everything was cool. We got to this one room and all of a sudden everything completely changed and it took me completely by surprise. But so then my hands started sweating like crazy. And the tour guide who was telling the story about this one ghost that was supposedly seen in that particular room, I really couldn't hear what he was saying anymore because I was overtaken by this feeling of kind of being, I don't want to say petrified is the word, but I just kind of kept hearing in my head, I have to get out, I have to get out, I have to get out. And I thought to myself, am I having like some kind of panic attack here? I mean, I was very coherent about that. This was really strange for me, you know? And so I was thinking, okay, well, I'm not one to like show if I'm having, you know, some kind of anxiety or paranoia going on or whatever. So I just thought, okay, I'm going to have to get through this. And just that entire time I was standing in there, just that thing going on in my head, I have to get out of here. And I certainly wasn't going to go running out. I didn't want to be embarrassed by that. And once we moved to the next room, everything just was fine. It was like somebody had turned this switch off. And then once we finally left the tour, I asked my husband if he'd felt anything weird in there, and he hadn't. He doesn't seem to be particularly sensitive that way. And so I did some research then and realized after, this is quite some time of doing research, that there were a lot of people who in that room in particular had similar kinds of events. And I had some friends that were deeper into the paranormal at the time. And they said, you know, it's possible that you had some kind of attachment, somebody who was coming in that was like, oh, you can feel me. I'm going to, you know, say to you, get me out of here, you know, whatever was going on. And so it was very bizarre. And I just became more obsessed with trying to figure out what that was all about. And just went from there.
A great, great demonstration of your sensitivity.
Marie D. Jones, welcome back, dear lady.
Hi. I know, I've been on with you guys quite a bit, huh?
You definitely have. In the context of today's discussion, please mm-hmm. tell us about what drew you from a very early age into such a deep dive into the paranormal research, which you continue to do.
Like the other two ladies, as you will find out, I think we kind of came tumbling out of the womb this way, because I can't find a definitive experience. I'm losing my voice. I just remember being really, really young, like 4 or 5 years old, and believing in UFOs and aliens and thinking that Bigfoot was in the woods behind my house. I have no idea. I was an early reader, and my mom would tell us a lot of stories, and I loved going to the library and stocking up on books, but they were mostly books about wildlife and science. And then I sort of started to see how the two worlds, the world of the known and the unknown, kind of blended and were both two ends of the same yardstick. And I think it helped a lot. My mom was always really spiritual and very creative. So we would tell ghost stories and stuff like that. But my dad, I think, was a major influence on my early obsession that has continued to this day with UFOs, because he was a big time. He passed away several years ago, but he was really a UFO guy. I mean, he went to Area 51 and he was a scientist. He's a geophysicist. And he used to talk to some of his colleagues when I was really young, and they were all, you know, still in grad school or professors and stuff. And there were oceanographer. There was an astrophysicist. I'm trying to remember who the guys were, geologists. And they would come over to our house and sit at the round little kitchen table and smoke cigarettes and play cards and talk about UFOs. And we had a neighbor who lived across the street who was a fireman, and he was obsessed. So I kind of feel like that influence was there, but I also had a lot of dreams, quote unquote, that now looking back, I'm not sure were dreams, because I can remember, I mean, they were so vivid. I can remember every detail. And it's just something that stuck with me. I got involved with the Center for UFO Studies and MUFON, I think when I was around 15. Later years, I ran a MUFON group in Los Angeles, and then here in Northern San Diego, I ran a group, and it's just been an obsession ever since. And now I'm doing a fiction project that's allowing me to take a lot of the research I've done over the years and actually play around with it a little bit. But yeah, I've had some ghostly experiences, nothing really direct, but enough indirect indications that there was something going on to keep me going and keep me wanting to learn more. And then when I started writing nonfiction, I was allowed to write about whatever I wanted to. And of course, the paranormal became my thing.
Marie, I noted in the chapter that was about you that your dad was a scientist. And yes. So it seems as though you come at this from a very scientific background. We have quite a few Marie D. Jones books on our library shelves, and you have covered a wide variety of topics mm-hmm. from a very scientific perspective, not just an anecdotal perspective. After my father passed away, one night when my brother was working at my father's desk and cleaning out drawers and doing things, he got a call on his cell phone, and the caller said "Dad" on it. Mm-hmm. And he picked it up, and it was just static. And then I read a very similar story in your background, but exponentially much, much weirder. And so I wanted you to just say what happened the night you got a call.
Yeah. And the funny thing is my dad's mom, my Nana, when she died, several members in the family got, and this was before cell phones, or cell phones had just kind of come out. This was on landline, got phone calls from, you know, with static on the other end. And I don't remember if we could do Star 69 at that time. But anyway, so years later, my dad died in late 2011. And I've written a lot of books with Larry Flaxman, as you guys know. Well, Larry's dad had died just shortly before that. And he told me that, or I said to him one morning, I texted him and I said, "Is something wrong? I feel like something is wrong." And he was like, "No, everything's fine. Everything's good." Well, shortly after that, he texted back and said his dad had died. The same thing happened in reverse. The day that my dad died, not only did the phone call come, and I think my sister got one too, I'm trying to remember who, it was a while ago, but Larry texted me and said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, should I not be?" And he sensed that, and then I ended up going, "You're not going to believe this, but my dad died." Really creepy. And I think a lot of it comes from being empathic, and like Denise's, being sensitive, and Nicole too. So having those sensitivities, you know, Larry and I, our fathers were very important figures to us. But my dad influenced everything that I do and still does. I believe science can explain everything. We just haven't caught up to it yet.
That's a good way of putting that.
Yeah, and my dad would say that. I mean, he was the one who said, "Science, there's a science to the paranormal." There is.
Right.
And I don't know what it is.
I've heard about the one call, but I never heard about multiple calls at the same time to multiple people, all at the moment of death. And you know, I'd like to know, what is the science behind that? Because that is very, very fascinating.
You know, and I have a lot of people, like after that happened, a lot of people that I talked to said, "That happened to me," or "That happened to my, you know, Aunt Louise." Yep. I feel like it has to do with energy as a form of communication, perhaps, that upon death, you know, that transition, that there is some kind of communication attempt, and it's energetic. And to some people, like my friend Carol, when her father died, he was on a cruise with her mom, and she woke up in the middle of the night and saw him standing on a ship in front of, like, at the foot of her bed. And she thought, "What the heck?" Found out later that her dad had died on the cruise ship at the exact same time. So I don't know if it's an attempt to communicate where energy takes the easiest route available, you know? And the funny thing is my dad and I always talked about, like, I always said, "All right, if you die first, you've got to send me a sign, you know, because you're the scientist." Mm-hmm. And so that must have been his sign. But the funny thing is he always kept science front and center.
Yes.
My dad was super spiritual. He was really into the New Thought movement and, you know, manifestation. And he got really into that law of attraction stuff, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, the science of consciousness. Yeah. Excellent. Consciousness. Yeah.
Thank you, Marie. Nicole Strickland, our dear friend. You know, if you say about Nicole Strickland that, "Wow, that lady sure knows her way around one boat in particular," that would be true enough. But believe me, there is so much more to Nicole Strickland, her life, her research. Nicole, we're delighted to have you back with us, of course. Tell us about the origins of your interest and your passionate pursuit of the paranormal.
Sure. So I think my experience and journey mirrors Marie and Denise's in many ways. I often say that I was born into this field. I think it was like destined for me to study this and not just study it, but have experiences. So my interest in the paranormal goes way back to early childhood, as far back as I can remember. The very first, what I think is a paranormal encounter, occurred when I was about 4 or 5 years old when I was living in Las Vegas. And so that interest in the paranormal stayed with me growing up, and I would get my hands on any books about it, any TV shows, documentaries. There weren't as many then as there are now, but just very, very interested, and had a lot of experiences growing up as well. I'm one that ascribes to the thought that everyone has channeling and psychic ability. I don't really call myself a psychic medium, but I do have that ability, and it's fostered. It's grown through my work in the field, and my parents, actually a lot of my family is in the medical field, and so growing up, I had this interest in death, not in a negative way, but just fascinated with what happens to us when we pass on. And so the last few years, besides just general paranormal research, and I'm interested in all the different branches of the paranormal, but mainly throughout the years, I've focused more on ghost research, haunted locations. But the last few years, I've branched off and have been studying human consciousness after death, you know, near-death experiences. So really getting into afterlife study and so forth. And so that interest just propelled as I grew older. And then I had this very profound culminating experience with the spirit of my maternal grandmother when I was in college. And that one experience actually catapulted me out into the fringes. And that's actually when I started to investigate with investigative groups. And then after working with several groups, I decided to form my own team in 2009, the San Diego Paranormal Research Society. So just this, and everything just seemed to gel after that. And I learned through my passion for paranormal study, I learned that, well, I love to write as well. So then I started writing, and then, of course, presenting about the paranormal. I have various different topics, presentation topics that I offer, just different, all about the paranormal. And then, of course, you know, the Queen Mary, of course, you know, that was something that you know, I never thought when I was a kid that, you know, I'd be a paranormal researcher or even an author. And here we are. And I never thought at all that I'd, you know, be researching the Queen Mary for 20 years. But that just happened. And I just think for all of us, all of this was meant to be for us. And even the other ladies in the book as well. Every single lady has such a unique perspective and a set of experience in this field, which, you know, really makes the book shine. And so it's really been an honor to work with Denise and Marie on this. I admire them greatly. I say this on every show we do, not just as authors, but researchers. And I think we work really well together. And so really, really proud of the book that we put out.
Nicole, where I think of Marie D. Jones as being scientific, when I think about you and the work you've done, I think about history. I think about the fact that you are involved in places. And so when you're looking to research something, you're looking at the people, you're looking at the land, you're looking at what used to be there that is no longer there, and the energies that you're feeling that go back, not just generationally, but 100 or 1,000 years. Where you get a sense, or you want to see what happened in this location. And so the Queen Mary, you know, obviously you've done a tremendous amount of research on the history of that, but also the history of other locations. So in addition to the writing, do you feel like history is like strong in you for how things are connected?
I do. And I often think about, you know, how maybe our past lives have influenced our desires and passions for paranormal study, and not just studying it, but the experiences and encounters we have. I think I often say that history and the paranormal are like best friends. They share a deep kinship. So that's a huge foundation for possibly explaining or having an explanation as to why paranormal events happen. I also am getting more into the whole, I know this is controversial for some people, but quantum mechanics and quantum theories of thought, you know, parallel universes, and getting more into how collective consciousness plays into all of this, talking about the phone calls, you know, that happened to me too. And my mom, with my maternal grandmother, of course, my mom's mother, after her death. And we actually did get calls from her. I think it was at least two or three. I was much younger, of course, when this happened, but at least two or three calls from her landline that would call the number, and then we'd pick up and there'd be static on the other end. So I think that there's something to this collective consciousness, of course, when we pass on, our physical bodies cease to function, but our energy, our soul, what comprises us as individuals, that just disperses out into the universe, into the multiverse. And I think people are able to channel that. So exploring that human consciousness, collective mm-hmm. consciousness aspect. But history, I think, is, in my opinion, you cannot delve into paranormal study without really yeah. delving into history. I think it would do it an injustice if you don't do that. So history is really important.
Thank you. The book is called Women on the Fringe. And I think after our break, we want to talk about the progress. Progress or lack of progress with women in the paranormal. And also, you have 32 friends in this book that have all written something else, and we want to talk about those people too.
Absolutely. The book, Women on the Fringe, Groundbreaking Women in the Paranormal. We are Manson Mitchell. Give us a couple of minutes. Thanks so much for tuning in. We will be right back.
Hi, everybody. This is Anson Williams from Happy Days, and I'm so excited to tell you about American Road. It is the best car travel magazine in the world. They have the most fantastic adventures detailed in each magazine with all your itinerary. We could just jump in the car with your family and have the most fabulous adventures you've ever had in your life. Please, get a copy of American Road and start your own adventure.
Staying connected with Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell is easy. Just go to mansonmitchell.com for the latest info on topics and guests. Friend Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell on their Facebook pages and like the Manson Mitchell Show page at facebook.com/Mance and Mitchell. If you're on Twitter, share a follow with Gary and Suzanne at Mance Mitchell. Join Gary and Suzanne Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. for an unusual show that covers everything from personal growth to the paranormal.
Here's an amazing act. Here's a tremendous act. Here's a startling act. The amazing, the thrilling, the greatest, spectacular, incredible, exciting, wonderful, world fame, most unusual, novelty act.
The home of the A-Team of Alternative Talk is mansonmitchell.com. Heard right here on Alternative Talk 1150 a.m. or streaming live from your computer anywhere.
Terry Loving wants to help you with your online marketing challenges right now. She has several courses she is giving away to help you get your business working for you online. Yes, giving away. WordPress websites are her specialty, yet her technical skills go way beyond that. Check out her blog at terryloving.com or email her directly at terry@terryloving.com. That's terry@terryloving.com.
On Friday, Manson Mitchell welcomed Bonnie Barnard to share spiritual insights with those who take self-empowerment seriously. This is where spirituality meets practicality.
On Saturday, Joey Medea, as versatile a guest as we have ever had, returns with stories from his vast file of haunted location research.
Bringing you mastery and mystery since 2007.
We are Manson Mitchell, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Easy on the ears, good for the soul. Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back to Manson Mitchell and three very special guests in 1 hour today. Denise A. Agnew, Marie D. Jones, and Nicole Strickland. And one at a time, I want our listeners to know how they can connect with each one of you. Denise A. Agnew, how can people connect with you, your website, social media, and any other information that you would like to offer?
Okay. Well, I'm primarily a fiction author beyond all the paranormal stuff. So if you go to deniseagnew.com, don't put the A in there or it'll probably go someplace weird. So it's just deniseagnew.com. And that lists all of my fiction novels. I'm a multi-genre author, so I like to write in all kinds of different genres, including history and paranormal, romance, all that good stuff. If people are interested in looking at what I do as a medium and a psychic and a oracle card reader, they can go to agnewcreativemedium.com, and that gives you everything on what I do with that. And I have an Instagram account. I don't go on a ton, but it is creativemedium888, I believe. I always forget what my own Instagram thingy is, so hopefully that's right. As far as things coming up, Marie and I are always working on some sort of crazy screenplay or that kind of thing, or novel. We have a nonfiction book coming out in May that I'm sure I'll let Marie talk more about that one. But we have that coming out in May, and I'm working on a horror novel. So I just try to keep out of trouble by doing all of that stuff all at one time.
So far, so good. Marie D. Jones, what is your website?
Oh, my Lord.
What do you have going on, dear?
Website is mariedjones.com. All social media, I believe, is Marie D. Jones. It might be Marie period D. period Jones, I think, on Instagram. Marie D. Jones, author on Facebook. I'm looking because I forget to. And Denise and I had a... We sold a screenplay, and the movie came out last year on Lifetime Movie Network called, what was it called? Secrets Beneath the Floorboards. And so we're trying to sell our next thriller. And then I had a romantic comedy, Mistletoe Connection, come out on Up TV. So writing screenplays, Denise and I have our first nonfiction book other than this together called Everyday Magic coming out. I think it's May 14th, Mother's Day. And it's sort of self-help, spiritual, just how to get your magic back when you've been through so much in life, and really, really fun book. Then what else do I have going? So in homage to my father, I had always wanted to do another book. We did a book called Super Volcano. We were going to do another book, but he died of ALS, which... is a really crappy disease, because over time you lose your ability to swallow, to see, to speak, everything. And I know at the end, when he couldn't read and research, it really hurt him. So I'm working on a project called File A. It's UFO related, but also incredibly scientific. And it is going to be written in epistolary format, which is letters, emails, between a father and a daughter, sort of describing an event that occurs, but how it's not really what it seems at the top. Mm-hmm. So, and then other than that, just hanging out with my animals and my son. Mm-hmm. And yeah, excellent. Just living life.
Nicole Strickland, how can people connect with you if they want to learn more about what you do?
Sure. So I changed my URL to my website. You might still be able to get there by going to authornicolestrickland.com, but it's now Nicole D as in dog Strickland.com. And then need to update it. I need to do that. Geez, it reminds me. And then my team's website, sandiegoparanormalresearch.com. We're also on Facebook at SDPRS. And then I just actually, and then social media, my main page is the handle, I believe, is Nicole D. Strickland. And then let's see, I have a Queen Mary Legacy Facebook page, Instagram, author Nicole Strickland. I'm on X, but I'm not on it that much. But that handle is my team's acronym. So SDPRS Nicole, at SDPRS Nicole. And then I'm coming out with a new show, which is called The Life Inspiration Project, soon. So I have a URL set. I don't have the website built yet, but that will be lifeinspirationproject.com, as well as a Facebook page as well for that, at Life Inspiration Project. And then as an ode to the Queen Mary, I just started a new Facebook group page called We Love the RMS Queen Mary. And I believe the handle for that is I think it's at Love RMS Queen Mary. And so my main focus for that is to design it as a main resource for people. photos, videos, historical facts, milestones, memorabilia, artifacts, stories. So that's what that group is for. And it's taking off and doing really well. So we're having fun over there, which is a good thing.
It's fun.
Yeah. So, but then in writing, I have a couple in the queue, a couple afterlife books that I'm, I have outlines for that I'd like to start, another historical book as well. So that's kind of what I'm doing. Some presentations coming up in the summer. But that's about it. Just trying to stay out of trouble.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. Can I say something here?
Please.
Why do we all feel the need to stay out of trouble?
I know. Why do we feel like that?
I was going to say something about good trouble, you know.
Isn't that a female paranormal thing, you know?
I don't know. What is wrong with us? Oh, my gosh.
I know. I had to throw that in there. Okay.
Let me get to the hard-hitting question of the hour, ladies. And sticking to the format, Denise, let me begin with you, and then Marie, and then Nicole. Simply put, let me ask, is there a glass ceiling for women in the paranormal as we see in many other sectors of our society? Denise?
I don't think so much anymore, because really at the end of the day, most of the female population that does paranormal research, that kind of thing, they've been doing it for a really long time, for decades, if you think about it. We have evidence for that. If you'd like, look at the back of our book where we have our rest in peace kind of section, our memoriam section with people like Linda Godfrey and all kinds of people in that list that were doing it way before there were any TV programs about it. And I think sometimes in one way people get the impression that there's a glass ceiling only because they're used to seeing what's on television and not seeing a lot of teams with women in them. But even that, over the years since the first, I think Ghost Hunter show, I think it started around 2004 or something like that. That is slowly, the women getting into it has slowly been more of a thing. With this book, I also think what we do is we point out that there have been a lot of women doing this for decades as well. So I think it's more perception than reality, but I do think it's really great that this book showcases that that is a fact, that there are more women doing it, and that it maybe will encourage more women to get into paranormal investigation, any kind of strange stuff like that, that they're interested in doing.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Marie?
I totally agree. I think had we written this book 5 years ago, it would have been a much different picture. I don't know that ceiling exists, except when it comes to perception. Because you see the men more, you hear more about them. So that doesn't mean that the glass ceiling hasn't been broken through. It just means you're not seeing the women with the hammers, and the drills that are breaking it. And that's one of the reasons why we really wanted to do this. I mean, we love men and we love what they've contributed. And we just felt like there's incredible stories out there, only 32 of which made it into this book, of women that are just down in the trenches doing the work. And we wanted to shine the spotlight on a lot of names that people may not have ever heard from or of. So I think that ceiling has been shattered recently, within the last 5 years. And now it's just changing perception.
Right. Well said.
Perception. And Nicole.
Yeah, I agree definitely with Marie and Denise. There are so many other women that we could have asked and that could have been in this book. Maybe a second volume down the road, we don't know yet. But I think, the universe works in weird ways, and what's meant to be is meant to be. And the women that are in this book, the stories, their experiences, their perspectives are just so amazing and unique, and educational and informative as well. And so I think the book also goes to show that, women aren't just in the paranormal and not just good at the woo-woo side and the metaphysical side and the psychic medium side. Yes, they are, but that they can also understand and learn about and teach about the science approaches as well. And, you know, another aspect is just there's all different types of topics, women in different branches of the paranormal in this book. So it's not just ghosts and hauntings, where, you know, it's cryptids, it's ufology. It's even, we have a spirit artist in there. We have a galactic researcher, for example, mm-hmm. authors, podcasters. So women from all walks of life working in the trenches, doing valuable research to this field. And so I, the 5 years is perfect. I think that we're starting to see a shift in perception amongst, you know, the population, and that women really can contribute to this field.
Denise, yeah. I was surprised to see 32 other people besides you three that were authors in this book, each having their own story. And I don't know if the answer to this is self-evident or not. So I'm going to ask the question, and that is, have you met a lot of these 32 women, and do you feel like the women work more cooperatively than competitively? Is there a difference in how women approach the paranormal?
Oh, that's a really good question. I haven't personally met a lot of the ladies that are in the book. The two of the ladies that I brought in to the book, one of them is a personal friend, and the other is someone that I met indirectly through a lot of different channels, and we've talked more than once. And I would say, like, Marie and Nicole in particular have much more experience with these particular individuals that are in the book than I do. But I do think that, you know, that's a little hard for me to answer just because of that, because I don't know them as well. And so I can't tell you whether they would work great together or that kind of thing. But
good. Yeah. Well, no, you answered the question. So thank you. You know, a couple of these women, Marie, mm-hmm. do you know more than a couple that are in this book?
I do. I'm trying to remember, because I've been doing this for quite a while. I think I met a couple at conferences a long time ago. I haven't done conference in a long time. But a lot of the people that I brought in were people that I have been associated with for years, probably over 10 years. People like Jill Hansen, Shannon LeGros, people that I, you know, we've been Facebook friends, or we've communicated for some of my other books. And they've contributed stories to some of my other books, like Celebrity Ghosts and Notorious Hauntings. And then women that were always on my radar, like Sophia Temporelli, who I just absolutely adore, you know, who's been doing her show since she was 12, and I've never been on her show, but we've chatted, you know, back and forth. And so, yeah, I mean, the funny thing is that we were talking about this, how now that the book is out there, we're all seeing women on our social media, like, oh my gosh, we should have asked that, you know, all these other women that we didn't even think that it's like, they're going to be in volume two. And then having people tell us about women that they know that we didn't have a clue existed. And it's like, oh my gosh, there's so many more that we could pack into this one book.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Nicole.
It
sounds like Marie's really cooperated with a lot of different women in the paranormal. Have you had that same experience?
Yes, I have. I know a lot of the women in the book, not all of them, of course. Some I've worked with personally, especially those up in the Pacific Northwest. Lisa Crick and Nicole Tito, for example, from the Midwest. We've worked together on investigations. And then other women that I know were Facebook friends and I know of their work. I may not have met them in person. And then, of course, there are a few that I've never met, but have met through this book, which is amazing. But I think women, speaking of in this field, I'm seeing, at least in the book, so to speak, a cooperation and a collaboration. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not just that, but that every single woman that's in the book is very dedicated and passionate, you know, for this field and in what they do. So I think that that's evident as well. But it's nice because on our social media feeds, you know, we're seeing women, you know, buying the book and taking a picture saying, look, I got the book. And we're getting all this really good positive feedback. So I think there's a cohesiveness with that. And, you know, people are really enjoying the fact that we're helping to bring women in the spotlight, so to speak. So
I like that too.
Absolutely. Thank you, ladies. I can't let the moment pass without noting that I've said it before and I'll say it again. All of us who are interested, particularly intensely interested in the paranormal, are, as I like to put it, within 6 degrees of separation from Rosemary Ellen Guiley.
Oh, yeah.
And if there is ever a Mount Rushmore for women in the paranormal, we know probably whose will be the first face to get chiseled on it.
I forgot to mention her. I've worked with her, and
I
was going to say she is lovely, which she is, because she's still living, maybe not physically, but she is lovely. She's, wonderful person.
She served as such a wonderful mentor to so many of you. There was a lady, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who was an excellent writer and researcher, whose passion came through on every page. She was so diligent, and she had such a wide-ranging curiosity.
Yeah.
There wasn't much, or maybe anything, that she wouldn't investigate. And when she investigated, she did it with an admirable thoroughness. And then she would write about it so entertainingly, so informatively. And her influence is going to extend well into the future, I do believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure, for sure.
Yep.
When it comes, I'm going to bring this up because I get the feeling, and I've seen this in other avenues of life, something can start out, however well-intentioned, as the old saying goes, coming a cropper there, and yet good comes of it. And I think of that when I think, Nicole, of the chapter you wrote about the history of spiritualism and the Fox Sisters. Now, spiritualism was one of the hottest religious tickets, so to speak, in the 19th century, particularly before, during, and after the Civil War. And with the westward expansion, families were broken up. People missed their loved ones. They wanted to know that they would see them again, though not necessarily physically. Spiritualism had its heyday, and it's still around. It still flourishes to some degree. But spiritualism fell into disrepute, I think it's fair to say. And yet, look at the work that you ladies do. Look at all of your colleagues, male and female. Spiritualism, at least to me, appears to be something of a taproot for all that came after. Denise, how do you feel about that? Do you relate to it the same way?
It's interesting. Spiritualism, I read about it a really long time ago. And then when I started doing some courses and classwork with some mediums, including at least two that are British, and the spiritualist church there is much bigger than it is in the United States, I think, per, the number of people that attend. And is it Lisa Williams and I just lost the guy's name. It just went out of my head, but I've had classes from him. That's terrible. Anyway, but I learned a lot more from them because they were able to give me more information on what mediumship is in the spiritualist church and how that isn't necessarily how every medium either does their mediumship or understands their mediumship. So it was really helpful because I do think as a medium, what I've learned is that it definitely does not work the same for every medium or every psychic. And that's something that's really interesting to learn through them and what is different with the spiritualist church and the way they do things and the way other mediums might do things. So I felt like that was super educational to learn. And I do think that the whole disreputable thing that, went on in the church many, many years ago, that doesn't seem to be influencing anything right now, from what I can tell. That's smoothed over. And I don't think a lot of people even know about that in the first place. So it's kind of hidden. It's kind of buried in there. Unless you're a person who's really, really into the paranormal, you're probably not even going to know about that.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And Marie, your perspective, spiritualism, still doing good in the world, as far as I can tell. And yet there has been quite a lot of controversy over the years.
I mean, there was a time when, you know, science sounded so backwards and we believed in insane, ridiculous things that we know now are not true. And I think the foundation for anything is going to be a little shaky until it sort of finds its footing. And so you had a lot of people in the spiritualist movement that were very intent on doing the good research and trying to figure out what was going on and not being charlatans and frauds. And then you have the charlatans and frauds. And I mean, science is the same. So right, I think the focus, but it's like the foundation for paranormal research was laid down long before any of us ladies were born. Mm-hmm. And it's our job to take the best of what they learned and add to it and expand upon it, just like in any other science or field of study.
Yes.
And Nicole, I felt that your chapter was written as objectively as could be managed. I mean, you had a lot of facts in there, a lot of history, but the best way I can put it is to say, I think, Nicole, that you were fair to the people involved, to the progenitors in spiritualism there, and to the movement itself. You didn't put it down, but you didn't shy away from the controversy either.
Yeah,
I think that was fair, because there's so much to write. It's hard to write a chapter just on spiritualism. So I wanted to give more like an overview for, let's say, those that even have never heard about it. And, you know, going back to the dawning of man, regardless of your culture, there's been this interest in, okay, what happens to us when we pass on? So there's been this interest in that for thousands and thousands of years. Spiritualists felt, okay, they believed in life after death. They believed that those in the afterlife could be helpful and that we could contact them. Those were three big beliefs of the spiritualist movement. And although the taproot, as you said, is a great way to describe it, because although there was controversy, it did bring the idea that there is some sort of life after death forward, and it got people interested. And it was the basis for the founding of the Society for Psychical Research. Talk about science. That was the first main scientific organization. So like Marie said, you know, science hasn't changed, but there are certain things I think that mirror the spiritualist movement in modern day society. And I think that there are things that don't and that have evolved from it. So again, it's about perception too.
And with that, I'd like to circle back to Marie. You know, it's great that your father and his comrades and colleagues could sit around the table playing cards, having a drink, smoking a cigar, and talking about UFOs, because in the scientific world, I regret to say, to talk about UFOs in a serious way can be a career killer.
Well, yeah, and okay, I'm 62, so if this happened all that long time ago, things were a lot different. And my dad always said these were not things that they could talk about in the quote-unquote halls of academia. But now, yeah, and I think people like Michio Kaku and Fred Allen Wolf and other physicists who have written books that have been accessible to mainstream readers, I think they've broken through that ceiling of, okay, you know, it's okay for scientists to talk about this stuff. Not only that, it's okay for them to be on paranormal shows talking about the possible links. And I think that's done it. I think books that have come out by these people have done a tremendous service to bridging science and the paranormal. But yeah, back then, you know, you could talk about it with your neighbors and your colleagues, but you couldn't do it on the job, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to give out each of your names and each of your websites one more time before we close the hour. Denise A. Agnew, her website is deniseagnew.com. Marie D. Jones, and her website is mariedjones.com. And Nicole Strickland, and her website is nicolestrickland.com. Well, for three cats, You guys did really well in being herded by Gary and I this hour. And I appreciate all three of you coming on. We did it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies, so very much. And the book, once again, Women on the Fringe, Groundbreaking Women in the Paranormal. You have graced us with your presence on air today, ladies. I hope that we get to meet in person someday soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good talking with you again.
Likewise to all of you. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you have a great week ahead.
Here's what's coming up next week on Manson Mitchell.
On Friday, Manson Mitchell welcomed Bonnie Barnard to share spiritual insights with those who take self-empowerment seriously. This is where spirituality meets practicality.
On Saturday, Joey Medea, as versatile a guest as we have ever had, returns with stories from his vast file of haunted location research,
bringing you mastery and mystery since 2007.
We are Manson Mitchell, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.